This is a place.
This is a place.
This is a place. We want to talk about. This is a place.
Welcome to this week's episode of This is a Place podcast. My name is Nate.
And I'm Brandon.
And happy National Pancake Day.
Oh.
But when you come, you have to start strong and you have to finish strong. Those are the tricks, right? You can't be like pancakes, all exciting at first, but then by the end, you're sick of them.
Isn't that the truth?
That is one of the truest things Mitch ever said.
Oh, he said so many other truths.
That one is a real good truth, though.
There's a ton of places. For example, we went to Tucano's last night, where it's like all you can eat, like meats and food. I could even do like all you can eat pizza places. I can do all you can eat sushi. But the thought of doing all you can eat pancakes never appealed to me. Like when IHOP does their all you can eat, you're like, nope, I'm good.
Yeah, it's fun for a couple minutes, right?
Yeah, they're good. They're good. I'm not dissing pancakes. I love me some pancakes. Do you ever put peanut butter on your pancakes?
Probably. It's not something I do frequently, though.
That's good.
Have you seen the fantasy football challenge or the loser challenge where someone had to stay in an IHOP for 24 hours, but they knock off an hour for each pancake they'd eat?
Oh, really?
You didn't see that
so
video?
So basically, if you eat like one pancake an hour, you only have to be there for like 12 hours.
Right. Yeah. So if you go in, like say you want to go in, knock out a couple hours, you know, eat six pancakes, you knock off six and just as many as you'd like until your time is up.
That's what I would do. I would do like one pancake, maybe two an hour. Depends how big the pancakes are too.
I could see myself doing a heavy first couple of pancakes. Start off, you know, when I'm liking them. Eat as many as I can when I'm enjoying them.
Don't eat the day before, so you're really hungry and really want it.
Yeah, but that's fun. That's one thing we're lacking in our friendship is some good, how would you call that? Some punishments. We don't really do fantasy together, but I think the only reason to do it would be so we could have some pretty good punishments amongst ourselves.
Yeah. Do you ever watch Impractical Jokers?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I see the clips.
Yeah. My wife and I like that show. Well, it's fun to watch like one, maybe two episodes, and it's one of those that you can only watch for a little bit, and you're like, okay, this is getting old.
It's just getting a little impractical.
Right. They just go out and do challenges, I guess you could call them, throughout the public. And then it's kind of funny how they decide, which I don't know. I don't know how they do it. Because all of a sudden they're like, oh, Murr's the loser today. And you're like, why is he the loser? You only did like one challenge or maybe two. It's just, they just randomly pick whoever the loser is for the day. And then they do a punishment where during their challenges, I feel like they can always, because they're competing for points, they can always back out.
Yeah.
And say, I'm not doing this. But the punishment they have to go through, because they won't end the punishment until they fulfill all the requirements of said punishment. So that's what you're saying, is that we should have some challenges and then the loser has to be punished.
Maybe that's part of our up and coming YouTube channel, something we can integrate. Yeah.
What's another way to say Practical Jokers?
Another way to what?
Another way, just being a knockoff of Impractical Jokers.
Oh, a knockoff?
But have a YouTube channel of it.
The crazy thing to me is that how are they not recognized everywhere at this point? How are they still able to trick people in public?
They still, every once in a while, I think they'll show clips of people who recognize them. But you're right.
I just imagine it gets harder and harder as they go.
Yeah. I feel like as the seasons go on, especially lately, they're like doing more with like celebrities or going to, they're less out like in the general public and more like an isolated place. Does that make sense at all? Like, yeah. They'll go to a store location where they know their what do you call it? People don't watch. Just the demographic of people that probably don't watch the show.
They go in and they pull everybody beforehand. Hey, have you ever seen this show, Impractical Jokers? No, I haven't. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it's a fun show. I like to see the clips. But yeah, that's a long way from pancakes.
Kind of.
That's what we do on this show.
You started it. You went down that rabbit hole.
I did the tangent fantasy this football. Time.
The fantasy football. Can I tell you, though? It's not really a nightmare, but dream I have a lot lately is, like, last night I had a dream that somebody, like, shaved the top of my head.
Okay.
And I've had dreams like that all the time where somebody, like, cuts my hair, and I'm always, like, bummed out because I'm like, dang it, like, we were going to do an episode of the podcast. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, so real that I'm just, like, bummed out. Like, man, I grew my hair out for nothing. Like, somebody, like, chopped off my hair without, you know, like, in my sleep or whatever it may be.
And you didn't get it.
I never had a chance to use it for the podcast or, which we need to find somebody. I think we're getting to the point where it's donatable.
Another haircut.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to go to the links. I'm not going to go to the links that I went to last time. Look at that. An unprovoked pun. Yeah. But I think I'm going to get to the point where I can donate it now. And I'm thinking I'm ready for one last hurrah. So if anybody knows a good barbershop, I guess it could also be what's the other name for not barbershop?
A beauty salon.
Beauty salon, or anybody who does haircuts that wants three people outside of me and you to know about it, let us know and we'll come do an episode on your location. And just so people know, when you're talking to people, the last time we did the hair donation, our reel, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Our little short clip, it kind of went semi-viral. So
it got like 20,000 views or something like that?
No, I got more than that.
Did it?
I got like 67,000.
Just word to the wise.
Yeah, that's like, that means every one of our listeners watched it at least 10,000 times.
Thank you. Actually, it was just Matt watching it on repeat for a couple of days.
Yeah. He forgot. He accidentally hit repeat and left his phone on.
Left his phone on, right.
Your laptop or whatever it may be.
But you know, all this is great, but it has nothing to do with our guest today.
Pancakes,
Impractical Jokers. Switching lanes a little bit. We do tangents. And sometimes it leads us to our topic. Sometimes it leads us to what kind of guest we have on. Today, it does not do that. We're going to take a hard turn and introduce you to our guest today. We had the privilege of speaking with Garrett Rushforth, who is running for Senate, U.S. Senate for the state of Utah. And I know I mentioned in the episode, we don't really get into politics. We do a little bit.
Because I don't know anything. We do a little bit. We do have our thoughts. I can't wait.
Thoughts, but yeah. But nothing.
It's not really a subject that I'm versed in. Like, I don't, I know enough, but I would get cremated if somebody wanted to debate me.
But we wanted to talk to Garrett because he's an interesting guy. He's doing something different, he's doing something that we appreciate, you know, trying to make a difference. And so we wanted to have him on and talk with him and hear his experience. Here's our interview with Garrett. Garrett, thanks for coming on the podcast to talk with us today.
Happy to be here.
So tell us, who are you? Who is Garrett Rushforth?
Oh, man. Well, I am just a guy. That's probably the big thing, is I'm just a regular guy. I teach social studies and theater at a junior high. Both my parents are teachers. I grew up, part of my childhood was spent in West Jordan. Went to elementary school with Brandon.
Yeah.
For a little while there. Yeah, well, so moved away from there, moved up to Davis County. Just someone who feels like we're all people. We deserve a chance to be represented by someone who is also not making themselves out to be more than just a person. I don't know.
You're trying to keep it real. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, keep it real. Keep it. Let's not have these. We don't need to have every single word that we say carefully crafted in all aspects of our lives. Of course, we need to be careful, obviously. But there are some parts of like expression that we need to be straightforward with. And that's something that I think is important.
Crafting conversations is Nate and I's weak point. So we are in good company.
And filtering our thoughts are sometimes not
a strong point.
That's why we don't do this stuff live.
Yes.
Editing is a powerful tool.
No. We don't edit anything on this podcast. Nothing at all.
Well, all now wrong. I'm nervous.
No. you're in a good place, Garrett. But, I mean, let's talk about it. You are running for U.S. Senate to represent the state of Utah.
That is the dream. Right now I'm trying to get 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot. When Mitt Romney decided that he was going to be stepping down, he made a point to say that it's about time that some younger blood started being interested in getting involved in politics, as I think all of us can agree. 100%. A lot of our politicians tend to be old, dusty, you know.
Not with it.
A little bit out of touch. Yeah. Not really tied into the issues of a younger demographic. And I actually, and it initially wasn't my idea. My younger brother came home from college visiting for the weekend, and he pulled me aside and he was like, "Hey, did you hear about Mitt Romney?" And I said, I sure did. And he was like, "Cool. Do you know how old you have to be to run for Senate?" And I was like, "You got to be 30 years old." And he's like, "Cool. Do you know who we know who's 30 years old?" And I'm like, "That's quite the list, sir." He's like, "All right, let's make that smaller. What about our family?" And I'm like, "Well, we got mom and dad." And he's like, No. We have one more." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I just kind of brushed it off. And then it kind of festered for a couple of weeks. And I was like, "You know what? Why not just see?" Because the worst thing that could happen is that I don't get elected. Actually, the worst thing that could happen would be to get elected, because then I'd have to do the thing.
But you're willing to do it, right?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yes. I wouldn't try to throw my hat in the ring if I didn't know that I would commit myself wholeheartedly to being the best representative for the people of Utah that I possibly could be. And I think that's kind of my main thought and viewpoint, is that Utah deserves representatives that are going to represent them and not a national party. Because I think a national party doesn't really think about or really care about the people here. And that's not to say that there aren't some thoughts and some conversations out there, but a lot of the dialogue that happens is centered around huge corporations that are going to be pushing out these mom and pop shops that have been around Utah for generations, things that are going to negatively impact the ranchers or the farmers. A lot of the dialogue just ignores the people and is focused on the profit. And I'm not about that. I think that politics, governance is for the people, not the people exist to be used by the government. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like most people are closer to the middle, closer to not what the left and right have become. And mm-hmm. I feel like that gets lost a lot, is it's just, like you said, it's a two-party system, and mm-hmm. you go one way or the other. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're not running on any kind of party. You're not going Democrat or Republican.
The whole idea is to run as an unaffiliated candidate. And I like to make it very clear that I use the term unaffiliated instead of independent, because unaffiliated is a little bit more, it implies that I can't do it by myself. Independent is implying that we are standing by ourselves and we are doing this all on our own, how the sweat of our brow, whatever. But unaffiliated shows that it takes a community. And a community of people from all perspectives because an affiliation with a political party doesn't do more for our neighborhood than wearing a little badge. Like, we're gonna work with each other. If you go to community council meetings, if you go to school board meetings, if you go to a bunch of different stuff, they've become polarized as well. But ultimately, all of the discussion is for the improvement of our communities. And I think that that's super important. And I think that we have an opportunity in this election in particular to give Utah an opportunity to recognize that unity that we have intrinsic in our communities here in the state. You can go from Logan to St. George and run into anyone from either side of the political spectrum who would not hesitate to give you the shirt off their back if you were in need.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that we just have incredibly generous people, and we've been polarized against each other. There's a concept known as the other that a lot of like leadership, we saw it in we've seen it in many different wars over the years, where an enemy was created in order to give focus towards an objective or a goal. And that is something that I think that we have started to run into on our own political system, is that Republicans have turned the Democrats into the other, and the Democrats have turned the Republicans into the other. And so we have all but formalized an animosity for other people based off of these political ideologies. And I think that a conversation breaks down a lot of walls, but we're just not willing to have that conversation as long as we are wearing our red hats or our blue hats or what have you. I'm just tired of Washington, D.C. pretending that every day is Super Bowl Sunday up on Capitol Hill, when it's people's lives being affected by an unwillingness to compromise and work together. A lot of people have talked to me and said, okay, well, how are you going to make that different? As an unaffiliated individual, who better to stand at the middle and negotiate and work with other people than an unaffiliated candidate who is willing to have dialogue with both people, both sides? And if people get mad about that, okay, I am a big boy with big boy pants, and they can call me or say whatever they want. I teach junior high. There is nothing anyone could say about me that I have not heard from a bunch of 12 to 15 year olds. Those kids are brutal.
Do they use Rate My Professor even in junior high? Because I know.
No, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. They haven't got there yet.
Right.
We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
So that's sort of my perspective on this opportunity. And I'm obviously going to have some political ideologies that some people aren't going to agree with on one side, and other people aren't going to agree with on the other side. But that's important. It's important to have disagreement and individualism as well as unity, because a society that is too unified, and this is going to sound counterintuitive to a lot of things, but a society that is too unified doesn't grow.
Mm.
Because it once it achieves an objective, it flounders and it loses its purpose. That's why agreeable disagreement is important, and discussion and conversation. And so that's sort of where I am trying to land, is that agreeable disagreement. If they don't like what I am saying, that's fine. But they're going to like something else that I have to say that might make someone else upset.
We don't, like I said, we don't get into politics. We don't have politicians or senators, anybody on our podcast, just because we don't really get into that. But the reason
we will have a state senator eventually come on.
Who?
I'm good friends with Dan McKay.
Oh, that's awesome.
So did you see him wear his hockey jersey to the voting the other day?
I did. For the hockey team? I did. So I actually do hope we get an NHL team.
I think we will.
Oh, he did? I didn't see that.
That is actually like that was really, really cool. I think that Utah is a great place. We have such a robust hockey community here in Utah.
Yeah, it's growing. It's growing. It's good.
So it would just be wonderful to see a lot of that build even further.
Yeah, hockey. I'd love to see baseball. I actually think football would work before any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And my reasoning why is because football is only once a week. It's mm-hmm. is it 8 games a year that they have home games?
Something like that. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it's and then your preseason. Yeah. Because you think about it, I know our fan base or our population here primarily does not like to do stuff on Sundays, but I think you get 50% of the Utah crowd, 50% of the BYU crowd that would go, and they would fill one stadium. I just think it'd be easier. It's going to be really hard for Utah to show up. I mean, they will if the A's come do their little vacation test here run, in yeah. Utah for a couple of years, guest run. Mm-hmm. The stadium in Daybreak, I think, only holds like what 7,500, 8,000 people.
Yeah, it's not big.
That won't be tough to fill up every game. But I think it's hard when, and baseball's like what 88 home games or something like that.
Yeah, it's an outrageous number, but that's why they charge so cheap for, they're so cheap for tickets. True. Is because,
yeah, depending on the day and the game, the team, and all that stuff. So that would be tough. The NHL, I think, would be equivalent. I mean, it's the same as going to a Jazz game, right? You got to put the 15,000 to 20,000 fans in the stands, and I think we could do that, but it's still hard because it's a lot of games and it's a newer I mean, hockey is still, it's growing in Utah, but it's still not as popular as it would be probably in other states. But I think it would be, though. I think that we would get there and
we'd adjust,
because you go, if you go to a hockey game, whether you like hockey or not,
just electric. It is an electric experience.
100%. And it's different. I mean, going to a Grizzlies game is fun, but going to an NHL game is just on a different level, right? When you have that many fans in the stands and that talent. So we'll see what happens. I think
An NFL team would be amazing, especially with the potential for the Olympics to be coming back here in the 2030s. Mm-hmm. I think 2034 is when they're projected.
Right.
It would be incredible to have an additional space to host some more of the events, because it's too difficult to convert something like that into like a, I don't know. They don't do snow boxing.
But like, even for the venue, an Olympic, like, we don't want to go to that stinking Rice-Eccles Stadium again, you know, hate that place.
Yeah.
All the way up on the mountain. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Drive uphill.
I mean, you could just drive a stick shift, go down to Provo. It's so much more convenient.
It's better parking in Provo.
That's the most polarizing thing we do on the podcast, is our love for the Cougars and our distaste for the Utes. So,
well, I am a BYU alum, so
yes,
I got my degree in geography, specifically from BYU.
So there we go.
Okay,
you're on board too.
I'm on board. I mean, the use great. I just don't like driving all the way up there.
Agreed. Agreed.
Agree to disagree. Catch 22.
Well, the reason why, even though, like I said, we don't get into politics that much, except for maybe a joke here or there, but you intrigued me, Garrett, because one, you know, I know you, and from what I remember, you were a great guy. I'm sure you're still a great guy. Hope so.
Oh, good.
But
that's what your students tell us.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But I think your story and your campaign intrigues me just because of all the things you've said, all the things you've laid out, that you want to be different, you want to stand out. And I think most politicians say that. Do they really mean it? I don't know. That's debatable. It's easy to say, but it feels like when you say it, you really mean it, and you really have a true purpose behind that. It's not just, I'm going to come in and change things. But I think that your love for Utah, just from the things I've seen on your social media talking about it, your love for Utah and what we have here and what you want to represent here is what I think sets you apart and why we wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about that. It's even more awesome that your Utah Studies is what you teach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it called Utah Studies?
It is Utah Studies. So okay. I teach geography and Utah Studies and theater because I am also a theater kid. That performance, super dramatic. You got to be a little bit dramatic to get into politics, though.
Yes.
If you're not dramatic, then you can't be a politician.
Gotta love the drama.
Gotta love the drama. But no, I teach Utah Studies, and I've been doing that for a few years now. And I just love Utah. Utah is one of the most incredible places. I know that you mentioned you had Jonathan Cooper on here a few weeks ago. And he's into production. I hope that he mentioned that we have a lot of production happening in Utah because of the incredible geography that we have here.
Oh, yes.
We have the Salt Flats, which are world famous. And then we have swamps. We've got incredible mountain peaks. And we've got some of the most iconic deserts in the world. So it'd be very silly not to invest in some time going out and exploring some of the incredible natural wonders that we get to experience here.
Yeah, I think that's something that's kind of been down. Like we were getting like all the shows, Yellowstone was filmed here, all that stuff, but something changed. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd know more about it than I do, but something in the people up on the hill changed and we are not getting as much as we used to.
The tax incentive, I think, was what
it was a tax incentive. There was a bill that was not renewed is what it ended up being that really incentivized people to come and be here for film productions like Yellowstone. And like we had one with Mark Hamill a few years ago called Bixby Bear.
Oh, yes.
So we've had High School Musical, the musical, the series was filmed here, the Disney Channel.
I'm in one of the movies.
You're in one of the movies?
Which I'm in the third one.
Hey, yo, I love that.
Yep, I'm in the background. You can see me in there for a brief second.
Background work, you know, it's great. I loved it. I did it. I've done it for a bunch of things. Hallmark films here all the time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They have a whole season. They start sending out casting calls. So if any of your listeners want to be in a movie, Hallmark will put out extra casting calls starting in May. And they go all the way into September.
Eight.
And they're filming their Christmas movies in July.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a great time. Studio C also films still here in Utah. I had the chance to work with them quite a bit, actually. I wrote for them a little bit while I was in college.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So that's very fun. But Utah's just got an incredible opportunity for the film industry to come back. And I think that we've got some bills up this legislative session that are intending to incentivize film production to come back to Utah.
So I like to hear. Not something you'd be involved in, because that's at the state level, right?
That's at the state level. So if I were running for local office, that would be something that I'd be a little bit more looking at. But at the moment, I'm not in that. I'm shooting big, swinging for the fences.
And for the stars, which...
It's true.
Brings me to, I mean, you've got, you before Nate hopped on, you were telling us some cool stuff, telling me some cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You were telling me some things that I haven't heard about, and we love that. I was mentioning a recent episode, we learned about something we'd never heard, an event we'd never heard of. So I'd just love to hear if you've got do you have some things you could stump us, some things we don't know about that you could teach us about Utah with your knowledge.
So what I think you're talking about is Dead Horse Point, right?
Yes.
Okay. Dead Horse Point is one of Utah's state parks. We've got dozens of state parks. Like stateparks.utah.gov has a list. I don't want to give you an incorrect number off the top of my head, but I want to say it's something like 60 to 70 state parks. It's a ton. Dead Horse Point is one of the dark sky areas in the United States. And if you've never heard of the Dark Sky Project, it's a project that goes around and maps light pollution and lets you know how much of the night sky you'd be able to see in a particular area in the continental United States. And Dead Horse Point is one of those dark sky areas. And if you go out there in the summertime, it's an incredible place, incredible time, because it's over near Moab, so it's pretty warm. And then you can see the whole, like an entire arm of the Milky Way just across the sky. It's actually one of the first photos that you see when you put it on a Google search. But Dead Horse Point is also really, really cool because of the way it got its name. The settlers that went down into the Dead Horse area would corral horses onto this, it's essentially just this outcrop of rock looking over the Colorado River. And you have a very narrow section where the horses can be put in, and then it broadens out and they can kind of hang out and like graze if there's grass there, or the people will throw stuff there. But there was a time when the horses stampeded off of the edge. Cool. And so it was named Dead Horse Point from that point, because the horses freaked out and stampeded over the edge of the plateau, and
they became dead horses.
They were no longer living horses.
They unalived themselves.
Yes, they became deceased. It wasn't the fall that killed them, though. It was the rapid stop at the bottom.
I like it. Yeah, it's I looked it up just as we're talking, and it's pretty cool looking. I mean, it's got that typical Utah look, you know, the red dirt, which we all love, and it's quite an overlook.
I mean
feels like we got the Grand Canyon in our backyard here.
Oh yeah, we are really spoiled for some of the most incredible vistas in the world. When people come to Utah, they primarily come to see, there's either Temple Square and do sort of a religious pilgrimage of sorts, where they come and they want to see the Salt Lake Temple,
to the Mecca,
the Mecca of Mormonism, essentially. And then you've got our national parks. We've got five national parks. We've got Zion's National Park, we've got Canyonlands, Capitol Reef, Arches, and
Bryce
Canyon. Yep. They are incredible. And half of the visitors to the national parks are from the United States, but half of them are international.
Mm-hmm.
So we have people coming from all over the world just to visit our national parks. And they are so important to the economy of the southern Utah area, that when the government goes into the shutdowns, if the Super Bowl goes poorly on Capitol Hill and people don't decide to fund the government, the state has regularly funded keeping all five of those parks open during periods of government shutdown because of how integral they are to Utah's economy.
That's awesome. Have you been to all of them? I mean,
I have not been to all of them.
I don't know if you're going to get the votes.
Last summer.
You haven't.
That's just kidding. Really what's going to do it. That's really what's going to do it. Yeah. If anything, it's not my stupid face. It's going to be the fact that I haven't visited all five national parks.
I think they added that to the ballot. Like, if you're running for U.S. Senate, which national parks have you been to? And then.
That's good to know. I do have a couple of weeks that I can make a blitz down there.
I've been
to Capitol Reef, and I've been to Bryce Canyon.
Capitol Reef's my favorite, so at least you got my vote since you've been there.
I straight up got lost into Capitol Reef. We were driving, I don't remember where we were driving from, but me and my friends just like were driving, and it said, "Thank you for visiting Capitol Reef National Park." And we're like, "How did we get here?" We don't remember. We didn't pay to get in because we didn't. We got on some weird dirt road, and then we were just like, got back onto a paved road, and then said, "Thanks for visiting." And we're like, "We are the most lost we've ever been in our entire life." So
good place to be lost, though.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful. It was like, wow, this is amazing. And then
this should be a national park.
Exactly. No, my plan is to go down and visit as soon as possible, especially if I'm not able to get on the ballot. That frees up a lot of my summertime. Being a teacher, I get a lot of opportunity to see a little bit more during the summertime than I would in some of the other more traditional office types of work.
On the flip side, if you make it and you get elected, you're not going to have as much time here in Utah to go do those types of things. You'd be pretty busy.
Yeah, but I'll get invited to things, to events that are going to involve that. So, you know, there's a possibility that it'll happen anyway. Getting invited to events, really, I joke with my friends that the reason that I want to be elected is so that people will invite me to things and I can get...
You just want something to do on Friday nights? Is that what you're saying?
It's free food. That's what I'm in it for. Elect me so that I never have to pay for a meal again. I teach school. I'm poor.
That's awesome.
You just said again, you have a few weeks to figure out if you can make the ballot. How does that work? How does somebody decide, if I decided today, hey, I want a shot at this, how does somebody get on the ballot?
So in Utah, there is a particular process that you need to follow. And the lieutenant governor is the office that handles elections here in the state. So they're the ones who put out the information about how you might go about getting on the ballot. If you were trying to run as an affiliated candidate, so that means you are running as a Democrat or a Republican, you would probably go through a primary system where you go out and you say, hey, I want to be on the ballot as this, go through the primary system, and all of the different caucuses vote for you or somebody else. But if you're running unaffiliated, or if you feel like you're probably not going to win a caucus, but you still want to be on the ballot as an affiliated candidate, you need to have signatures. You need to go gather a certain number of signatures to qualify to be put on the ballot. As an unaffiliated candidate, these are 1,000 verified signatures of registered voters here in the state. So if I can get 1,000 people who are registered to vote and can verify that those signatures are real people and not fraudulent signatures.
Just John then, Smith 100 times.
Yeah. John Smith, JohnJohnJahn.
John Smith.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
John Schmidt.
Smith. That sort of thing. And if I can get those, then I turn that in to the lieutenant governor's office, sign paperwork saying, hey, I'm not going to steal election funds for my own purpose, and I will turn over all of my finances that are being towards the election, and then I am on the ballot. If you are running affiliated and decide to go the petition gathering route, you need to gather 26,000 signatures, which is why a lot of people just tried the caucus route.
It's a lot of paper.
So much paper. Especially since each paper only has 10 slots for signatures on it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's 100 sheets of paper for signature gathering. And not every signature will be verified. So you take them to the county clerks and the county clerk says, okay, yes, this is true. Okay, yes, this is right. Okay, yes, this is right. Nope, this seems fake, or this doesn't match up to stuff we have in our record, so we're not counting this one. Or this one already signed their name to another petition. You can only sign one petition to get someone on the ballot. So if you sign someone else's petition for this particular office, then your SOL, and that signature is not valid. So it's a process, and it has to be physical and it has to be in person because the signature gatherer needs to witness every signature happening. So I can't, it's not necessarily me. I don't have to watch every signature. I don't have to watch 1,000 people sign a piece of paper, but I can have other people go out and gather signatures for me. And I have right now about 13 people who are out there. I have been checking in on them and they're like, we're good. And I'm like, that doesn't tell me a lot of information, but I'm going to trust you. How many, how much numbers is good? Is 4 good or is 400 good? Like, where are we at?
Yeah.
So that's the process. It's kind of involved, but I think that it's important for us to follow not only the laws that's written, but also to interface with the communities. That's huge for me. I think that getting to know our communities is something that a lot of politicians might brush off and not take into consideration. I can't tell you how few of our politicians I've met in my life. And I am a pretty involved person. So I like to be involved in what's going on. I read like 6 different newspapers a day. And I say newspapers, but they're like news websites. I like to keep up with things. So it's important for me to be involved and in the know. But I just haven't met with and talked with a lot of the politicians, though the plan is to try and interface more with them as things go on, regardless of whether or not I get on the ballot.
If you don't, I'm not saying you won't, but if you weren't to get on the ballot, things didn't work out, what would be your next plan? You want to keep pursuing this political motivation or?
I think so. I think the true objective behind this isn't necessarily to be elected. I know that sounds silly that I'm trying to run for office and like I'm not worried about being elected. Being elected is a secondary objective. The primary objective is to show people that regular people are qualified and should consider themselves qualified to run for office, and that it's not an elitist situation where extremely wealthy or extremely connected individuals are the only ones who can win. Because I think that the layman should have as much of an opportunity to represent their communities, if not more, than somebody who operates off of the 60th floor of an office building, because we're connected to our communities and those are the type of people that we need to be trusting to know what the average and common Utah is going through and needs. And that to me is a very, very valuable and important part of the process. So if someone can look at me and say, you know what, that guy didn't make it, but I think if I tried hard enough, I could. Perfect. That's really, if I can inspire someone to do and succeed where I have failed, then I have succeeded.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
So I think I take that a lot from the vocation that I'm in, and my parents. My parents are those type of people who they're not really the ones who like to stand out in a crowd, but they are always the ones who help set people up for success. And if that's just part of my journey, is to help set someone else up for success, incredible. If people decide that they like what I am saying and that I would be a valuable addition to the representatives already in Washington, D.C., then I will do my absolute best to represent the people in a way that I believe they deserve to be. And that is by listening to the constituents and by hearing their issues. And again, people may not always agree with the decisions that I make, but I will always do my best to be clear and transparent with the decisions that I make and why I made them.
Yeah, that's important, because I don't think we get that these days at all.
I don't think so.
So if people wanted to sign for you or help out in any way, how could they get involved with that? Or I want to sign. Where do I sign? How do I do it?
Okay, well, there are a few things that we can do. I am currently looking at scheduling various different libraries to do like kind of a meet and greet signing night over the next couple of weeks. So I will have some petitions there for people to sign. Come say hello. I'll talk to you about whatever you want to talk about. I'm an open book. I love trivia. So I know a lot of things about things that really don't matter to people and a lot of things about things that do matter to people. So
I'm intrigued by the trivia aspect of things.
But. Oh man, Trivial Pursuit. Look, I am a generally affable man. I become a true nightmare when it comes to trivia night. I am a royal terror. I will win no matter the cost. But
That should be your campaign slogan, actually.
I will win no matter the cost.
No matter who I have to step over across, I will get those free meals.
I will. Those. It's all about snacks.
Well, cool. We'll definitely. Yeah. It's at some point, even if I need to come up and meet you somewhere, I want to sign your petition, Garrett. So if you have some event in the Salt Lake area, you know, let us know. Maybe I can throw that out to our listeners so they can know, and if they want to go sign as well. But
amazing.
It'll be fun to watch your journey and how things go along. You know, keep us posted. We're invested. We're rooting for you.
Of course. I think the biggest way to support at the moment would be to follow my Instagram page. It says Rush Forth for Senate.
It's a great name for a senator, by the way.
Thanks. I got it for my birthday.
You got it for your birthday?
Which one?
It sounds like Mount Rushmore. You know? Like, how could you not want someone like that in the Senate?
It feels very senatorial, doesn't it?
It feels very American.
It does. It's so American. Not to toot my own horn, I didn't come up with it.
Yeah.
It kind of fell into my birth certificate.
You didn't have a choice.
We're just going to roll with it.
Even if you didn't want
it. Right. I mean, I could go through a whole legal process to change it, but why?
But why?
It's dope.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, Garrett. For Nate, did you have any more questions or comments to make?
No, we'll go down a political road we shouldn't go down.
maybe off air we can have those discussions, Nate.
Yeah,
sure.
Maybe.
But yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been great to talk with you. And I don't know, I think you and I should go to lunch or something, catch up a little bit.
Let's do it.
Get out and vote. Well, wait, we got to sign the petition first.
Sign the petition. Yes. We need to still find Garrett and sign his petition. I know he's has a couple. I mean, I see him every, we talked to him, it was probably a few weeks ago at this point, but he continues to have events where you can go and sign up, and we will share some of those when we see him. But yeah, I still want to go and sign his petition. Give the man a shot.
Right. So I had my 2 cents that I wanted to add, but I didn't want to break away from the flow that we had interviewing Garrett. My 1 2-cent advice, I guess, if I had any political advice, is number one, and you kind of brought it up at the beginning, is that social media tries to get us, and the media tries to get us to think that this is the way everybody's thinking, where my belief is what you see on social media and what you actually see in the media is probably what 30% of the population's thinking. That's why you get a lot of surprise election results. Mm-hmm. Because people are told that this is the way everyone's leaning when it's not really the truth. So make your own decisions based on what you believe, not what you think the media is telling you to believe. My second thought is that it's really hard for, especially us in Utah, to have any poll or any influence on what really happens in the presidential election or what happens at the White House or things like that. The only thing we do control is stuff that's here locally. So if you really want to get involved in politics and make a change, start locally. And that's why it's a good thing to make sure that if you want your voice heard, to pay more attention to the people running for Senate and the House from Utah, because they have more pull than you'll ever have voting for the president. I think a lot of people always get wrapped into the whole thinking they're going to change the world because they made the right decision voting for the right president of the United States.
Yeah.
When reality it starts locally is
the bottom up approach. Really
have. Right. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Well, yeah. Yeah. We can't make a huge difference here nationally, but we have to start locally. So pay more attention to your local elections and your local representatives and still be cautious of the presidential stuff and the big stuff, but those are the ones that are going to matter most and make the most impact on your life personally. That's my political advice from the few years that I've been able to vote or pay attention to.
And I think, man, they should just do an all out blackout of social media for the month leading up to the election. Or maybe like at least the week of the election, because you don't want to see any of that. And we're coming into it. It's going to be It's going to be a drag from now till November. And that's why we do what we do here. We don't get into politics. So you can have a little bit of break from that. You can have a break from the stuff that really doesn't matter and the things that do matter. Places, people, things in Utah.
Yes. Let's look at the lighter things in life.
Yes.
With that being said, go, you know, once Garrett gets his petition signed or his signatures. It's not a petition, is it? Is it a petition?
Yeah, just signatures. I get, yeah.
Signatures.
Well, maybe I don't know.
Once he gets his signature so he can be on the ballot, you know, go research him. See if he's a good candidate for you to vote for. I liked what he had to say. And it was kind of refreshing. And I think it would be really cool to have somebody who's not a politician be the politician. I think we need more of that.
Agreed.
I think I mentioned that in the interview. It'd be nice to have people from all walks of life helping represent our thoughts here in Utah and nationally. What's
it doesn't have to be all retired businessmen.
Right. Well, stop having the 1% represent the 99%.
Here. Because when they get there, they're just making more money anyway.
Well, they don't know. They don't know what us poor folk go through. So yeah, get out and vote, make it happen. And then make sure you vote for Pedro, because all your wildest dreams will come true.
Thanks for listening to This Is a Place podcast.
And this was a person we just talked about.